You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Good evening, this is The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
No, energy.
No, I'm getting there. It's episode 174 on the 20th of July.
No, up, energy, more energy.
No, I'm getting there, and brought to you by Area 52, your friendly local, they sell games and stuff, they're all pretty nice.
They're friendly!
Still not enough.
And a smile!
Right.
Not enough, come on.
All right, so I'm Leon, right, you all know that. So what we're doing tonight, we're having a bit of role reversal, because I've spent the last 4 or 5 days moving into a new house, talking to lawyers and internet people and all sorts of mayhem. And
let me just pretend like we're interested, right? Yeah, go on.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, funnily enough, so Trent, so what you're going to do tonight, right? You're going to be the youthful, smart-assy one, right? That's your job tonight.
Aren't I always?
No, sure. I'm going to be the just unhappy about everything kind of guy.
Oh, that I can see.
Yeah, and Garth, you get to be the old beardy one.
Oh, excellent. Do I get to talk about Kate Miller-Heidke? Can I talk about Great Western Trail? But I just can't remember what I want to talk about.
Anyway, it is happy to be in the ears of all of our fine fans out there. But yes, I have had an absolute shocker. But it is me, Leon, joined by Trent and Garth, and we are going to talk to you. Well, they're going to talk to you. I'm just going to sit here curmudgeonly.
Yeah.
What are we doing this evening, Garth?
All right, well, it is 100 and episode.
I've already done that.
Okay.
No, wait. We're starting again.
All right.
I can't cue up the music, so I'm just going to go.
All right.
The Dice Men Cometh.
Go. Welcome to Edge Radio, number 3.
Leon, shut up. Garth.
Welcome to episode 174 of The Dice Men Cometh, coming to you from the studios of Edge Radio in sunny but currently really cold and miserable Hobart. Tonight, we are going to mix things up a little bit because we are not going to start this show with what we've been playing this week. And the reason of that is because...
Cut. We have... Go again.
...an interview with Martin Klein, who is a Spiel jury member.
That
and
is
he
correct.
Is going to have a chat with the youthful Trent. Is that right, Leon? Youthful Trent?
Oh, just get your bloody job right.
You see
what I'm doing there?
Yeah. About all things Spiel and Kenneth Spiel and why they decided to make the wrong decision in their recent awards. No judgment here. But then we will talk about what we've been playing this week, which will be the final game out of the 3 Kenneth Spiel nominations. So it wasn't Raiders of the North Sea and it wasn't Terraforming Mars. It was the third one.
The one that won the best one of the lot.
That one. So anyway, we will then go on to another interview that the young and youthful Trent has done. Is that right?
All this... And an interview with Nathan Tucker from the north of this very state, Taswija.
Yay!
Who's got himself on Kickstarter with a very interesting sounding project on the Dice Men Cometh, thanks to Area 52, whom we love because they love us, on the show that brings you board games and card games every Thursday night on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Mangelwurzel.
Yeah.
Apparently. My House is the name of the song. Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This is the geeky show, The Dice Men Cometh. My name is Trent.
I'm Garth.
I'm Leon. I just threw my microphone muff at Garth.
We'd like to apologise for the show so far. Leon's been moving house. Speaking of houses.
It's so nice, but it's so much effort.
Which is about the most stressful thing that the modern white man needs to do.
Yes.
With his life. So really, you should be thankful.
Yes, I should be.
But you should be thankful that your wife is letting you come out to do this instead of unpacking boxes, perhaps?
She's on night shift. She doesn't know any better.
The other thing we're thankful for are the good people in Germany who put together the Spiel des Jahres, the game of the year, every year, which was just announced earlier this week.
Only a couple of nights ago. So, Trent, you were very lucky to speak with Spiel des Jahres juror, Martin Klein. Now, long-term listeners will know that the Dice Men have been a little bit sceptical and have done some hard-hitting investigative journalism about the Spiel des Jahres over the years.
Yeah. Well, the whole point of this award is basically for people like us to have a bit of a whinge every year by the sounds of it. That's pretty much all it is by this point.
Well, poor guys. Yeah, I put that to Martin, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised because he gives some pretty straight answers in this. And suffice to say, we've actually accused Spiel des Jahres judges of being corrupt.
Correct.
Previously.
Yeah.
And I've put that to him.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, you're so ready. You're so ready.
I'm so ready. I'm so ready. And that's the first time in my life that I've been called mate. I've always dreamed of that.
You've not been out to Australia then?
No, no.
Unlike every other German ever.
Yeah, right.
Martin,
how are you?
Yeah, very well, very well. I'm not using the video chat because it's very early here and I'm in my dressing gown and my slippers and I don't want you to see me.
Yeah, same here. It's very late here and I'm already in my pajamas.
Yeah.
So who am I talking to? Is it Trent? Or?
Yes, yeah, my name's Trent. So I'm one of the hosts of the Dice Men Cometh. For starters, I'm always excited to talk to anybody from Germany. Wie geht's?
Sehr gut. Sehr gut, danke. Und selbst?
Ich habe eine Schubelschreiber.
Eine what?
I don't know. All right, so let's get into it. King Domino is the winner of the Spiel des Jahres this year by young Bruno Cathala. I think he's going to do well, young Bruno. I think he's got a career in gaming ahead of him, this young man.
Yeah, an upcoming new designer. Never heard of him before.
King Domino is the very essence of a family game. What made this the winner for the jury?
What made this the winner? Well, it's a really accessible game. It has components. It has something that most people already know. So the domino component in the game certainly helps to make the game more accessible. And overall, it's just such a neat concept. It's a really elegant design of a game, and it's playable by everyone. And so that certainly helps, and it's a good winner. I'm happy with the choice we made. Although the other two games that got nominated, Magic Maze and El Dorado, they also had their upsides or their pros. But in the end, the jury decided to award King Domino.
Do you think that it's a? It really strikes me as a bit of a kid's game, though, isn't it?
A kid's game? No, yeah. It's certainly not a kid's game. No.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. It's a light game, obviously, but it still has, something to not burn your brain out on, but something to think about while you're playing it. And you have to think forward. You have to think about the possibilities of your next turn. You have to keep in mind which tiles may show up in the future. And so I think it's really a family game, not a kid's game, no.
Well, this is probably a good chance for us to talk about how the Spiel has changed over the years. You can see that yourself, I'm sure, that the types of games that get awarded have changed, yeah?
Well, board gaming is an evolving hobby and evolving thing. So obviously the awards change as well. You can't really compare the games that we award now to the games that got awarded like 30 years ago. So the award has been around for almost 40 years now, and obviously things have changed since then. And well, what we a recent change that we did, not so recent actually now, it's almost around for I think almost 10 years or 7 years or something like that, is the Kennerspiel, which really is something that we did to, make the Spiel des Jahres accustom it to the changes in the board game industry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because gaming got more and more complex, and we certainly did not want to award expert games, but we wanted to award games that are a bit more complex than the usual Spiel des Jahres game.
So do you feel that there are games that have won the Spiel des Jahres in recent history that, well, before the Kennerspiel, that perhaps weren't appropriate, that perhaps weren't the right choice?
Well, I haven't been in the jury back then, but I know, and I think that's common knowledge, at least in Germany, that Dominion had something to do with that, because in hindsight, the members of the jury thought, oh, well, this probably was a bit too complex for most of the audience, and I think that was what initiated the Kenner Spiel des Jahres Award.
All right, well, let's talk about the Kenner Spiel, because this is certainly the one that our show is interested in, and a lot of hardcore gamers, of course. Exit the Game, a trilogy of games, and I note that you've managed to keep the award in Germany again.
that's certainly the only thing we are after, to give it to German authors. That's the only thing that matters to us. That's why we gave it to Bruno Cathala. He's German, if you didn't know.
I love these guys, and I still play Village quite regularly as well. I think it's a fantastic game. So what is it about this trilogy of Exit games that made it the winner?
Yeah, well, they certainly are something completely innovative in a way, and they really did a great job in transporting the feel you get when you do an escape room, like the real event. Yeah, that you can do, and they transported that to a board game really awesomely. That's really you really get the chills when you play the game and you really feel the tension and want to do it as best as you can. And the riddles they created for the game are really clever and really mind blowing in a way. So you always just sit there and be like, oh my god, that's the solution. Wow, that's so clever. And that's true for all three games, and that's why we awarded all the three first Exit games that they created.
So the fact that these games are sort of one and done and disposable in a way, without giving away too much about them, has that helped, the fact that that's a very fresh and different approach?
I don't think that really helped. I wouldn't mind if they were replayable, but for what they did, it just works better this way. And it wasn't something that we really thought would hinder giving that an award. Some people say that it's not a really a game in that way, not comparable to other board games, but for me that totally didn't matter. It's just about the experience that you get, and for this game, it's a one-time experience. A Time Story and Pandemic Legacy were one-time experiences in a way as well. Well, I wouldn't say that helped or was harmful for the game.
The favourite for us here in Australia was obviously Raiders of the North Sea. You know, New Zealand being our neighbours. What was it that was attractive to the jury about that game?
Well, what I really liked about Raiders of the North Sea was that, kind of a new approach to worker placement, and a worker placement without really having to do much of a cleanup phase. So it basically is worker placement that cleans itself up. And I thought that was pretty clever, because you place your Viking and take another one, and then you do two actions. And that's, I think, a really nice approach that worked pretty well. And it overall was just a nice game. And yeah, so it was a great game to be nominated, because it is not too complex. It is accessible for players that have a bit of experience with these kind of games. And so that was a great nominee.
But I do think the world was a little bit disappointed that Terraforming Mars didn't win. I mean, that was absolutely the clear favorite.
Yeah, the geek world, or the board game geeks, the experts, probably rooted for Terraforming Mars. I'm aware of that. But that's not what the Kenner Spiel really is for. The Kenner Spiel Award is not for expert gamers. It's for gamers that have played the usual gateway games like Settlers of Catan, Carcassonne, and stuff like that, and want to take the next step. And I think Terraforming Mars can work for that audience, but it is not clearly the winner in that regard, as some people that are expert gamers would have thought.
And this is an important thing that I want to try and get to the heart of, about the difference between the Spiel Awards and the American Geek Awards. I mean, guys are really talking about mainstream audiences, aren't you?
Right. So, as I said, the Kenner Spiel is not targeted. The target of the Kenner Spiel is not the board game geek crowd. And basically, if you have played all the games that are on our nomination list and are aware of them before, then you're probably not the audience that we are looking for. We are looking for casual gamers, and even with the Kenner Spiel Award, we are looking for casual gamers, but a bit more experienced casual gamers that just need a bit of help to, find the right games that they can buy. And these are people that only buy like one or two games a year, and that's what we're aiming for.
And I understand that the award ceremony actually gets television coverage in Germany. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have some from the news shows that show up, and that not in every news, but
sure.
It's always a bit of the question is always what else happens in Germany at that time. So, like, I think in 2014, Germany won the soccer championship. World Championship the day before, and nobody cared about the Spiel des Jahres in that year. But this year we had some coverage.
Sure, excellent. So what about yourself, Martin? You run the Spielleben blog, and what's that? How did that start, and how does that turn into you being on the jury?
Well, it started with becoming a board game geek at some point in my life. So I just discovered this whole world of board gaming, and that just led me to playing more and more. And at some point I thought, okay, I want to write about board gaming. And then I started the blog, and then I thought, okay, why not doing video reviews like Tom Vassell or something like that, because that really wasn't that big in Germany at that time. We actually didn't have any or just like one or two board game video reviewers back then. And so I just started a YouTube channel. And, well, at some point, the guys and ladies from the jury approached me and asked me if I wanted to join them. And, well, I thought, that sounds great. That's exactly what I want to do with my blog. I want to spread the word about board gaming. And, well, that basically led to me becoming a board game, a Spiel des Jahres jury member in 2014.
Now, I'm going to ask you a rude question, and I hope you don't take offense at this, Martin. It's something we've talked about on our show previously. The fact that all the winners of the Spiel get to place that logo on their box. And as I understand it, the publishers pay for that right. And if they've got the logo on there, they can sell hundreds, thousands of more copies. Isn't that a case of the Spiel jury sort of picking winners and getting some kind of financial return for it?
I see where that question is coming from, but the thing is, with these licensing fees that we get for our logo, for the Spiel des Jahres logo, these are not used to pay any of the jury members. So we all do that on a voluntarily basis. We all are unpaid and do that just because it's our passion. And what the money is used for is basically to paying for all the work that is linked to the Spiel des Jahres, which is, for example, having a person that does our accounting and does the licensing and answers all the questions that may show up regarding Spiel des Jahres. It's also used for paying for the ceremonies. The money is used for we have a sponsorship each year, and we also do a scholarship for new gaming designers. So that money really doesn't affect the jury members. Actually, a jury member really doesn't. I actually don't know how much money this Spiel des Jahres creates for the jury, and I actually don't care, because that's nothing that I would ever take into account when I choose a winner.
All right. Well, you understand I have to ask that, so thank you.
Of course. No problem.
So how much of a commitment is it being a jury member? Are you constantly getting new games to play?
Yeah, actually, that's true. I think I've gotten over I think 200 games over the course of the last year.
Wow.
And yeah, it can become a bit stressful, actually. I know that sounds horrible for someone who has to pay for all of his games, but it certainly is something that takes up all of my spare time, and it's also something that becomes kind of a duty to play all the games. And sometimes you think, I want to play this old game again. I want to play, I don't know, Tsulkin, or I want to play Dominion again. And you don't have the time for that because you have to play new games. And it can be stressful, but most of the time it's awesome, obviously. So I'm not complaining.
I know exactly what it's like. Don't worry. And you have a day job as well. Like you're. So does this mean that there's a pause after the award and then it starts up again, what, around, right. around Essen? Or
Right. It's a new games start coming in right now. So I just received, for example, a new package of games just this week. And I start playing them. But the real big wave of new games obviously happens at Essen. And after that, it's the same madness every year again. The summer months actually are used, at least by me, to play older games, games that I didn't get around to play because they were not important for the award. For example, if they don't have a German version, then they are not eligible. And so these games, maybe I've bought a foreign game at Essen and I didn't get around to play it, and that's the months now that I can play it. So I start playing the games I bought at Essen for myself, I start playing them now.
You don't use the summer months to go outside and get some fresh air, Martin.
What's fresh air?
Martin, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you so, so much for taking the time and staying up so late in Germany to talk to us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Trent, Garth and Leon tonight for The Dice Men Cometh, for a show that has so far proved to be, let's face it, a complete shambles.
Train wreck.
174 episodes of this show we've done so far. You would think by now that we would be getting close to getting it right.
Nope.
Let's just move on.
Yeah, let's, sure.
And let's actually talk about what we've been playing lately, which is what we normally start. See, this is the problem. We've turned the whole show upside down.
Yep.
Leon's had no sleep.
No.
So what we've been playing lately is all of the Kennerspiel des Jahres,
yes,
award nominees, which are, of course, Raiders of the North Sea,
hey,
which we've talked about by mm-hmm. our designer friend Shim Phillips,
mm-hmm.
Terraforming Mars,
yeah,
a source of some small amount of controversy in this studio,
bollocks,
and the winner, Exit the Game.
Yeah.
Well, one of three games, actually, yeah, which
and
were,
a lot
which
more
were
to come.
Played. And more to come?
There's a lot more Exit
Seven
games.
More to come.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Right. So Exit the Game, if you haven't heard, has won the Kennerspiel, which is German for the sort of experts game, the gamers game, that is announced at this time every year.
So why I shall talk about the Exit Game is because I've played all three of them. We sat down the other week, us three and young Mark and Carl, and played one of them. It was the Pharaoh's something or other.
Yeah, the Pharaoh's 2.
The Egyptian-y one.
Yeah. And these are three games in a series by the same designers.
Yep, by the same designers, the same guys that did the game The Village, which we will possibly play later tonight.
Inca and Marcus Brand.
Yep.
And they formally won the Kennerspiel in 2012 with Village.
Exactly.
So they know what it takes to create.
Yeah, and Village is a great game.
Is it
ever? Well, go on.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot in the last couple of months about all these games that I've played, because I think now I've come close to playing pretty much every single escape room in a box game that there is out there, or at least all of the main ones. There might be some smaller little ones I've not heard of, but I've played all of the big ones.
It's certainly this year's zombies, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. And this Exit series is the other ones you could repack up again. There are instructions in most of them how you could repack up again, and other people, you couldn't do them yourself again, but you could give them to friends to do whatever else. Whereas these Exit ones are one off, one done. If you get halfway through, have no idea what you're going to do, that's it. You've already ripped stuff, you've cut stuff, you've whatever else stuffed, it's done and done.
But they're also priced accordingly.
But they're also priced accordingly. They're also very cheap.
But these are literally disposable games. Play once, never again.
They are disposable games. But when it comes to all these games that I've played, I do believe that these Exit ones, I think it's appropriate about the nomination, because I think they are the best out of the Escape Room series. Style of games, I should say. That's mm-hmm. what I'm looking for. They are definitely the best. And from a actual marketing standpoint, I completely 100% understand why this has been popular. I also understand why this has won what it has. Because the whole point of, we know the Spiel des Jahres is more for a more mass market thing. It's a game that you should be able to see in our equivalent of a Kmart or a Big W,
yep,
or around the world. You should be able to see it on the shelf and family will pick it up. Whereas the Kennerspiel is more the gamer's game, which is obviously a bit more fiddly and, you know, hardcore. However, they still wanted it to be marketable. Whereas something like a Terraforming Mars, which I've had my opinion on, but that's beside the point. I'm very much the minority. Everyone else loves it. And even Raiders to a lesser extent. That is a game that I think are much harder to get people to play, whereas the Exit, Escape Room in a Box, you could very easily get this to play. You could take this around your family's, you know, Sunday night roast, plonk this in front of them and go, and we're doing this for the next hour and a half, and they'd probably enjoy themselves. Those games, you put them in front of them, they probably would want nothing to do with.
Well, I think the Exit Rooms in a Box are a bit more in the sort of current zeitgeist. These aren't very intimidating looking. They're only very small, small boxes.
Yep.
Difficult to review without giving away any hints.
Yes. Yes.
Suffice to say that you do have to think a little bit sort of outside the box.
Yes, there is definitely
Solve some of the puzzles.
Some of the puzzles are a lot harder than others, but again, everybody's different when you play this game. One puzzle that could have taken us 10 minutes, someone else could have stolen in 30 seconds, whereas an opposite could have been for a different puzzle.
What kind of puzzles are we talking? There's a lot of code breaking.
There's a lot of things to do with numbers and letters and pictures you've got to look at and try to find stuff. And
searching for little clues in pictures.
Yeah.
But I guess what makes this one different to a lot of the other ones that I've certainly played, and most of them have been with you, Leon, because you've just bought every single one ever, is that this is just a deck of cards.
This one is, yeah.
That's it.
And a little wheel and a book.
Yeah, but it doesn't have a chrono decoder and it doesn't have, you know, images or cuts up bits of newspaper and other props that you have found in some of the other escape rooms that we've played.
Yeah.
This is purely a deck of cards. And yes, on those cards there are pictures of artifacts or rooms or puzzles and all of that, but it is purely about the size of a regular deck of cards.
But it can show you that these systems can be different, even though they are just a deck of cards, because we also talked about Unlocked, which is another one of these, which is exactly that. It is just a deck of cards, absolutely nothing else but a deck of cards. And that was my least favourite of all these by a mile.
Mm-hmm.
So it just goes to show you how good design can make the difference. And so the reason why I think that this one, personally, is because of that, the fact that you could much easily get people into playing this than the other ones, even though the Kennerspiels kind of really like that.
We played this with there were five of us playing this.
Yes.
And I wonder if you can cast your mind back to that night, because I wouldn't want to play this with more than maybe a couple or three people at the most, because frankly, Leon, you're a bit of a bloody savant at these escape room games. I mean, an idiot savant. I want to make that absolutely clear.
Yeah.
But there is something bizarre and inexplicable in your brain that makes you good at these escape rooms.
I said before, the metaphor on the night, that back when I was in school, I used to be really, really good at mathematics, in the sense that if somebody put a question up on the board, I could answer it. They would then ask me to tell me my working out, and I could not do it. I could not tell you how I got there or how I wrote it down. I could just tell you the answer to it, which in these games probably doesn't really help the situation. But yes, having played all of these games, and I played one of these bigger box games, Starlight Manor, I think it was called. We played that with about six or so people at the pub, and it was fine, but yes, there was definitely people doing nothing. So this, four or less, like four or three, that's what you want. You can do it with two.
Because Leon just goes off on his tangent, right, and the rest of us just aren't following him at all. And the components in these exit games are so small. A lot of hard to read text, not easy to get around. There's no big board.
Yep.
There's not a lot of colours or designy elements. I don't mean to say they're not well thought through, because they're an amazing little set of puzzles, but it's a lot to ask for a group of people to be engaged with, and that's what happened. People became disengaged throughout the play.
And I think Mark particularly sort of had to take a seat back, purely because, again,
He's the most stupid amongst us.
He is the most stupid. He also has a tendency to forget his glasses.
Yeah. Actually, he phoned before the start of the show. Yeah, just to say that he still couldn't remember that thing from Great Western Trail that he wanted to talk about.
Fantastic.
He'll let us know if he does think of it.
That'd be good. Please call in again, Mark. That'd be lovely. But look, one of the challenges with this game is absolutely the player number, because you don't want more than four players.
No, do not.
Because you just can't do it. But the other thing is, out of the escape rooms that I've played, I actually found it possibly the most complicated to figure out the actual path that you're meant to take.
Yep.
Because in this one, you are not only trying to crack codes, but you're trying to crack codes that relate to the half a dozen or 10 different symbols that are in the game.
Yep.
And in order to successfully escape or succeed in this game, you've got to crack 10 different puzzles.
Yep.
And it just became...
And the order of those is not apparent.
The order of those is very... Yeah. It's very important, but it's also... We probably spent the first 20 minutes trying to understand Leon's explanation of this is how you progress in the game.
Yeah, but it's just like all those puzzles. How I said it, some people can get it instantly, some people don't. I mean, unless my explanation was bollocks, which it very much could have been.
Well, we talked about that after you'd gone.
Yeah, that's very much true. But it's the same kind of thing that some of these systems you'll wrap your head around quicker than others. Mm. But, yeah, this one I think is relatively straightforward-ish.
So, look, suffice to say, it's an interesting evening of gameplay. It's certainly worth having a crack at least one of them, if not all three. Winner of the Kennerspiel, I can see what they're getting at.
Well, this is where we look at it through the eyes of being board gamers.
Exactly, yep. So I think we can all agree, though, that the favourite going into the awards this year was Terraforming Mars, despite what some people in this room may think of it. What do we have to say about Terraforming Mars that hasn't been said before, aside from go out and play it, for God's sake. It's an amazing game.
I will not argue that Terraforming Mars probably is the best game out of all these. It's just not my cup of tea. But I would argue that...
I don't understand why you don't like it, though.
I've said this before. I still only played it once, so give me a chance. But I firmly believe that these kind of awards should very much focus quite heavily on innovation. And I don't think Terraforming Mars innovates in the slightest. And in our actual hobby and expanding our hobby... These escape room and games, people might say they're a fad, they're whatever else. They're a new thing, and there could be a big thing. And they could be a way to get more board games into the hands of people. This could be the new ticket to ride for this generation, to get people into playing Terraforming Mars a couple of months down the track after you got them into playing games with an exit game. And I think that alone is another reason why it put them over the edge for winning the award. Even though Terraforming Mars will probably be the game people will be playing for years with more expansions to come out and whatever else.
Yep.
But I think these escape room in a box, and this one being the best of the lot of them, deserved what it got.
And Raiders of the North Sea, a surprise nomination? A good game.
I didn't see it coming as a nomination, but I didn't disagree with it once I heard it, because, it's a pearler of a game.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd see... It's just a it's okay kind of game for me.
Yeah, and maybe a little lighter than what people might feel deserves to be in the Kennerspiel.
Well, that's what I kind of think, because I think that could almost be in the Spiel category, and then the game that won the Spiel, which was King Domino, I think that could easily have been in the kids category, because that you could play that with a 5-year-old easily. But there you go.
Well, this is what happens as you get older, guys.
Yeah. Exactly. That's why we listen to expert jury members.
Yeah. Well, we attempt to when we get the audio correct.
But look, what I do want to say about Exit is it does do a couple of things really interestingly, and it does mix
things up. Interesting, you say.
I do.
You
I
and
do
your think, old bearded man
exactly,
ways.
Exactly. I feel like I have to. But it certainly does make you think about it, and it is not as obvious as it would seemingly be when you first open the box and look at that deck of cards. It does become a more intriguing prospect as you go along. And admittedly, I've only played the one scenario, but there were a couple of the puzzles in there that really were not what I expected. And from that point of view, that was a lot of fun. It was great.
I have to agree with you there, because I've lost count of the amount of times I've played either a video game or a board game that is offered up puzzles saying, oh, this is really challenging, only to have the designer walk you through the answer.
Mm-hmm.
This certainly doesn't do it. These are a genuine challenge.
Yeah, and I really love that. Like, we have done quite a lot of these games, and we have played a crap ton of board games and strategy games over the years, and there was stuff in here that stumped us for a while. And we had to rely on not one or two or maybe even three of those clue cards that you would get. And look, we're used to feeling stupid, but it really made us feel stupid in parts. It was great.
And some another thing that's different than this than all the rest of the type of these games is that there's no time limit on this one. There's a graph in the back of it which shows how long you've taken and plus how many clues you've used, and it gives you a rating out of 10.
Yeah, so how you know you've won.
Yeah, so you'll get a you'll always finish it unless you just flat out go, I don't care anymore, and stop. You always win, and then just depending on what star rate, same as like the Sherlock Holmes consulting detective, you always get to the end. How well you've done is kind of up to you. But also, we've played this one. We played the Egyptian one. I've played all three of them now. So there was the lab one and then the abandoned cabin. The abandoned cabin was the first one I got because it looks like the cabin from Evil Dead. So that was always going to be the first one I was going to get. That was the best of the lot of them. That was the one I would recommend everybody starts with.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So, should we try and have another interview, Trent?
Let's try, shall we?
Let's give that a punt.
Let's try. We also have a competition winner to announce because we've been giving away a crap ton of dice.
Yeah.
So we'll do that. And we also mustn't forget to thank our dear, 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 dear friends Schwartz and Co. at Area 52 who are supporting us despite us being a complete shambles. And we can only support them back by demanding that everybody go in there immediately and purchase something and say the Dice Men sent you, for God's sake.
Especially on the 29th of July of this month, because they will be hosting a werewolf night by the Silver Bullet Society, who I have been told are just the coolest group in all of Hobart.
Well, we'll need to see if they pay for their sponsorship, and then we can talk about that.
Right. Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It's the Dice Men Cometh. More Radio Gold after this.
Well, there you go. That was Beat Connection with So Good. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, proudly supported by Area 52, as you would all know. So go to 104 Elizabeth Street, give them all your money, and then we've done our job. Is that right?
Pretty much.
Perfect. Now, Trent, we're going to go take two on another interview because you were very lucky to sit down and have a chat with Nathan Tucker, who is a local guy from Devonport who is running a Kickstarter called, is it Revolutionaries?
Look, there's more to it than just Devonport. I mean, it's bigger than that.
Bigger than Devonport? Is that possible? So, Trent, press the button and we'll come back after this chat.
We love Aussie Kickstarters at the Dice Men Cometh. We love Tassie Kickstarters, but I love it even more when it's people from all over the world just collaborating and you can't tell where anything has come from. And that's certainly the case with this one, because right now at the northern end of Tasmania in Devonport, I'm talking to Nathan Tucker of Rising Phoenix Studios about Revolutionaries from Make Believe Games. Nathan, g'day, welcome.
Thank you for having me on the show.
A pleasure, a pleasure. I have to admit to complete ignorance of what Revolutionaries was all about until a mate of mine hooked us up and said, hey, we've got a Tassie creator who's on Kickstarter right now with a great little indie RPG. So let's start at the beginning. What is Revolutionaries?
Well, it's the fight that started the whole ball rolling. It's the war that changed the course of human history. It's the war for independence.
We've got players uncovering the secret history of the Culper Ring. Now, I'm a little bit of a closet conspiracy buff, so I know a little bit about the Culper Ring myself. But for those who don't, take us through it. Who were they?
So I'm sure that some of our listeners out there would have watched that fantastic, wonderful show called Turn, AMC's Turn, which focuses on Washington and Washington's spies. What we do know is that during the war, Washington and a number of the other high-ranking officers of the American forces started to really perfect tradecraft and spycraft. And the Culper Ring was one of the most successful aspects of that. In fact, we don't really know the full extent of the Culper Ring, and it wasn't until about 1930 where they actually signed up a couple of letters and went, hang on, the handwriting here is the same as this Culper Jr. individual. And they kind of, from that point, went, well, the Culper Ring was actually a lot more than we thought and discovered the history there. So the Culper Ring is a fascinating aspect of the War for Independence and something that we don't really know a lot about. So it was a really good launching point to get players into the American War for Independence.
Yeah, an actual successful, actual secret service.
And what we've also extrapolated with this, I mean, America has a lot of esoteric and Masonic influences coming out at this time. So we've kind of merged that in together and taken a little bit of artistic license and develop that what you know about the Culper Ring, you don't know the full story, and through revolutionaries you will discover more.
Yeah, because at first glance, this almost looks like some kind of historical reenactment war game or something, but it's absolutely not, is it? There's shades of the occult through all of this, and make-believe games is known now for its storytelling RPGs.
Well, look, we've got Mark Reinhagen at our helm, and Vampire the Masquerade and The World of Darkness, of course, is a wonderful example of taking folklore and delving deeper into it and showing the darker aspects. So, yes, what we have done is we've got a wonderful storyline together, but at its simplest level, what Revolutionaries grants the players is the opportunity to delve into the secret history of America, to become part of a secret society, if that is what you wish. However, if the experience you want is straight up, you know, muskets and sabers and militia and guerrilla warfare on the battlefield, then you can do that. This game caters to both styles of play. So if you're after something with a bit of bite to it, a bit of mystery, a bit of esoterica, great. That's what Revolutionaries is. But at the same time, you can take that framework and just play straight Revolutionary War.
All right, now take us behind the scenes and just explain the setup, mate, because this is your baby. This is your game, right?
That's right.
And you've used the Axiom system that MBG has been using on a whole bunch of games.
Right.
And you're part of Rising Phoenix Studios, which is a sort of youth artist collective based, well, not only based in Australia, but also you've got operatives overseas. So explain how all this comes together for me and how you hooked up with Mark and how the game started.
So for me, in my background, I'm a writer, artist, developer, and on the side, what I've tried to do here in Tasmania is basically do what I can to help the young artists of our wonderful state. So Rising Phoenix Studios is that. It's a Tasmanian-based community arts organisation. And look, we focus on primarily building the capacity of young artists, and we do that through diverse, interesting projects and trying to tailor direct mentoring. So through my work at Make Believe Games, I have been able to bring Rising Phoenix Studios into this project, and a number of our young artists have basically gotten in on it. They've got their first jobs, whether they're doing art or doing some writing for the project, getting direct mentorship from the MBG team, which is a fantastic opportunity for them.
So how did you originally hook up with Make Believe Games?
Basically, I've been working with Make Believe Games for a couple of years, working on our previous wonderful I Am Zombie game. If anyone has played it, you guys gave a great spot on our Toxicity release, which we did on Kickstarter last year. So I Am Zombie, I think you mentioned before, the Axiom system.
Yep.
Axiom system is an interesting new take, innovation in tabletop gaming and role-playing.
Yeah, I love this idea. It's 52 cards, a few dice, no pencils, no character sheet.
Under the Axiom system, you can create a character in minutes. You draw yourself five cards, and these cards are filled with character types, professions, personality traits, skills, and you'll take these cards and you'll be able to merge them into a character, develop, taking which particular traits work. Some of them, you know, you might take more than others. So if you're looking at the I Am Zombie games, take, for example, you might draw a daredevil card, a mobster card, a mad artist, a politician or something like that. And so from that, you'll be able to start to create this character. Perhaps that my character is a mobster who had political ties through, you know, a corrupt senator on his payroll, et cetera, et cetera. And so these cards will start to shape a personality. And you can build from there. And we're doing the same with Revolutionaries. Each of these cards will have a particular aspect, trait, or character type. We've also put a lot of actual history and historical quotes through it. So what we're really trying to do with Revolutionaries is also give historically accurate and just, I guess, that level of education that young people would be able to play these games and go, well, this is fantastic. I don't really know too much about the American Revolution, but I'm fascinated by this this card I've got here, this courier card, and look, here's a portrait of Paul Revere and a quote. So it's kind of a gateway that I'm kind of hoping that we might be able to just develop that love of history as well.
Yeah, yeah, pass it off as education. You might get a government grant. I know how it works.
No, not at all, not at all. I guess I suppose it's selfish. I mean, I do have a love of history myself, so anything that I can do to kind of spread that is fantastic.
So just explain to me a little bit more about the actual play of the Axiom system, because I've not played it myself. Is there a DM? How does the story progress and how do characters develop through it as you play?
Sure, sure. So under the Axiom system, we use a standard, you'll have a narrator, someone that will guide the play. The system is set up, the axioms, what axioms are, as opposed to a hard set of rules that you must follow to play a game, the axioms are a set of loose guidelines that you can tailor to make the best gaming experience that you want. So the first axiom is our most important, is basically make this game your own. Choose which rules work and choose which rules don't. So if you want a very crunchy, complex experience, you'll go through all the axioms and you'll use the advanced rules. If you want a simple, very narrative-based game, you'll only use a few of the axioms that work. We've done away with the character sheets. These five cards initially form your character. And as I was just explaining before, you'll take those traits on the cards to create your character. These cards also serve as your skills. Each one will tell you basically your strengths and weaknesses in key abilities. Your physical, your mental, your social, your ability to cause mayhem. And they also serve as your hit points. So when you take wounds or damage or stress throughout a game, you'll flip a card over.
Right, right. And you've got a bunch of booklets. There's a very rich bunch of historical stuff for the scenario. There's the actual rule booklet, and then there's the...
That's right. That's right. Three core books will make up the product. So the first one is our Culper Handbook, which is an in-game artifact. So basically this is what you as a member of the Culper Ring will have to memorize and learn. This is your secrets. This is the rituals. This is the initiation. These are the tactics that we use. The second one is our Axioms, which has the rules of the game. And as you said, the third contains a couple of modules ready to play.
And all of this is a hair's breadth away from funding on Kickstarter right now. And there's also the, just as add-ons, you can grab the I Am Zombie and Toxicity games, which use the same game system, just with that different flavour. So obviously I Am Zombie and Toxicity, which is like a grindhouse thing, yeah?
Absolutely. It taps into that 70s grindhouse feel.
So I understand that Make Believe Games is also sending you to Gen Con for your trouble?
Well, that's right. I am going over to Gen Con, making an appearance with Make Believe Games, and actually through the amazing support and advice from Arts Tasmania, I've actually received an Artsbridge grant to go over and deliver a panel.
I knew it! I knew you were getting a government grant in this somewhere! I bloody knew it!
Well, this has got nothing to do with revolutionaries. This is on a panel. So the panel that I'm giving is Legends, History and Mythology in Gaming. And basically it examines ideas, innovations, challenges for using, you know, history, myth, folklore in games and products. And we've got a great panel lined up. Of course, Mark Runhagen, C.A. Suleiman, two legends in the industry. And of course, Mark Runhagen, I mean, this is the 50th year, 50th anniversary of Gen Con. So... Mark Runhagen is a guest of honour, and C.A. Suleiman has been selected this year as an industry insider. So I've also got Ryan Shoon, who is a great industry peer of mine. So it's a really good panel to be on and to be delivering, and it's a wonderful opportunity for me.
Man, this all sounds like great fun. Nathan, it's really cool to hear about this. It's even cooler to hear about young Australian and Tasmanian artists reaching out to the world and collaborating online and putting together such a great little project like this.
Thank you very much for that, and thanks for having me on the show.
Ah, cool. So that was our interview there with Nathan Tucker, a man who we only just met who is already much more successful than us. So that's good for him. This is me being bitter old Trent, remember? Not me being young Leon, who... Let's face it, he's just as bitter, he just doesn't like to voice it as much. Anyway, so that was our lovely interview. We're going to throw to a song now and then have some fun, more fun when we get back on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and thanks to the damn fine people who look after us gaming folk at Area 52. This is the Dice Men Cometh for another week with Trent, Garth and Leon stumbling through. That is the Goon Sacks with their song Boyfriend. I could use a boyfriend sometimes.
Well, you had Martin Klein, but you let him go.
Just to sort of look after a few. I mean, if only to pack up a game of Robinson Crusoe at the end of the of the night. Garth and I have started playing the Robinson Crusoe campaign expansion, Ooh. The Voyage of the Beagle. Yes, Charles Darwin, the board game.
What a great NPC Charles Darwin is.
Yeah, right. Very fiddly game, but gee, it's a lot of fun. We'll talk about that on a future episode of the Dice Men Cometh. And another Kickstarter that we've been talking about is an Australian one called Lucidity.
Well, it was a Kickstarter. It's wrapped up now. So does that mean it's no longer a Kickstarter because it's all in the annals of history?
Well, now Shannon has to actually go through and fulfil it.
Yeah, he's got to deliver on his promises. So have fun with that, Shannon. But look, Lucidity, six-sided nightmare, started with a very modest $14,900 Australian goal. Now, this game managed to end up, after its campaign, getting a whopping $170,000 Australian dollars, which, Shannon, congratulations, mate, on a brilliant effort there.
Congratulations on biting the bullet and letting us advertise your game, because before then it was not going anywhere.
Well, look...
I joke.
Said, it's every single game that we talk about in the advertising stakes, it funds. So
we are batting 1,000.
100%, guys. So look,
and they've all pretty much broken records as well, I think. Anyway.
Well, just, you know, but look, Shannon was also very nice in that he allowed us to run a competition using his intellectual property and his merchandise. So we have got a copy of Lucidity, which is our review copy. So, yes, it has been handled by a Dice Man. Yeah. Does that add or subtract from the value of it? Then he's also going to throw in 80 custom dice to second place, 80 custom dice to third place as well. So basically we are giving away buckets of dice.
And also, I probably should have asked this off air, are we going to send the prize out straight away?
Yeah.
So does that mean somebody in Australia is going to get, well, worldwide, depending on who wins it, is going to get a copy of this before anybody else in the world?
Well, possibly after Shannon and after us.
Yes, apart from everyone else.
Yes, definitely.
That's amazing.
So we asked people to send in their board gaming nightmares. We have three winners who have written them down. Garth?
Yeah, well, before we get to that, let's just read a couple of the other entries, just so that we know the calibre of the entries, because there are a whole bunch of different board gaming nightmares. We're going to start off with who we can only assume their first name is Brandon by their email address. Now, his family was about to sit down and play one of your favourite games, Trent, Ticket to Ride.
Oh, how much do I love Ticket to Ride?
Choo-choo. And then they were getting towards the end of this game, and I read, then my wife went and hit the table and knocked all the trains over.
Oh, no!
And his nightmare was never finishing that game of Ticket to Ride.
My nightmare is starting a game of Ticket to Ride.
It's fair enough. I like trains.
You like trains?
Yeah, I do.
Well, in that case, you'd probably like Great Western Trail, which Mark will tell you about when he can remember what he wants to tell you.
I don't like cows.
Anyway, friend of the show, Alex Winter, who, you know, is part of the Tabletop Game Designers Association, and he might have a Kickstarter of his own coming out soon.
Shh!
He provided an entry simply saying, not getting an oven in Agricola is one of his board gaming nightmares, and it must be said that an oven is bloody useful in the one game where getting hungry and eating food is so tense.
That might sound like a very specific nightmare, but I put it to you that in this crowd, on this show, it's not specific enough.
Exactly right. He did say in a four-player game. So three players, maybe not so much. And then Martin. So this is the last one before we get into the actual, you know, the winners. Now, I might need a bit of help with this one just to try and figure out what it is. So I'm just going to read it. So during a quick Capitals game of Risk, I needed to go out shortly. I start the game. I attack with three. Defend with one, he says. Really? Three? One? Dude! Three? One? I need to go out soon. Three? One? Needless to say, he stormed out without finishing my turn. I still don't understand it, but thank you for the entry, Martin. Please let us know what the hell it means.
That is a good question. All I know is that he started a game of Risk when he knew for a fact he had to go out very soon thereafter, which makes him a douchebag.
Oh, no. Martin's taken the time to write that in. It's not our fault we can't read his punctuation.
Hey, don't you go slagging off punctuation. Brothers, you're not a douchebag. You're a brothers in arms.
The point is he didn't win. So we've randomly selected a few, and but here we go in no particular order. However, we are starting with third place. So, David Mortimer, or Dave, as he likes to be called, said losing custom dice, so you have to get creative and sticker your own dice.
No! No!
Wakes up drenched in sweat. So I hope it was a bad, bad nightmare. And I don't know what dice he's talking about, but it doesn't matter because he's got 80 dice coming to him and he can sticker them however the hell he wants.
Yeah.
So congratulations, Dave. We will find out whereabouts in the planet you are and we'll get those to you. Then we had a little man by the name of Andrew Reynolds.
Oh.
Now, Andrew Reynolds' board gaming nightmare is one that's very similar to Trent's heart because he loves this game. But he's talking about playing your favourite solo game, Honorim, without any expansions. It's just so plain and so much shuffling.
Yeah, true. Although the shuffling doesn't end with the more expansions that you have to put in. But once you put them in, you'll never go back.
That's the thing. Yeah. It's just a game
about nightmares. So I think he's actually being quite clever there. So.
Yeah, he has. And our winner, Jason Hasseldine, thank you very much. He's addressed the email to the Dice Men, so it's from all of us to him. His board gaming nightmare involves an innocent storytelling game of once upon a time.
Oh, yes.
He got the game to play with his family, where in it revealed the truly sinister nature of his, at the time, seven-year-old brother. Now, his brother quickly turned that game of once upon a time more into a game of gloom, because any character that was introduced into the story soon found themselves in disastrous and very inventive situations, leading to their demise. Needless to say, the rest of us found it quite hilarious, but still a little creepy to know how his seven-year-old brother was. So congratulations, Jason. You have our copy of Lucidity Six-Sided Nightmare coming your way. Again, once we find out where the hell you are.
Which you can play with your younger brother, and turns out if he's an actual demon or not, you will find out within a few quick rolls of the dice.
Oh, hang on, guys, my phone.
Yep. Mark.
Oh, okay. Well, this could be it. This could be the thing we've heard about.
All right. Okay, I'll let everybody know. Yep.
Here we go. Yeah.
Now, that was Mark just phoning in. He still can't remember what it was he was going to talk about from Great Western Trail. Yeah, so, okay.
If that doesn't make sense, listen to last week's show.
This has been another episode of The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And hasn't it been great?
It has been seamless. One of the best ever.
The fantastic thing about doing this show live every week on Edge Radio, aside from the great people at Edge Radio who look after us, along with the great, great people at Area 52 who look after us as well, is that we take the live audio, we chop it up, and we turn it into something good, which is a podcast that you can actually subscribe to on iTunes.
You can.
If you want to listen to it again, but sounding a bit more together.
A bit more professional.
And where else can you find us? On our website. We have a website.
We have dicemencometh.com.
We never talk about our website.
Well, it is a beautiful website.
There's pictures of us on there if you want to see what we... No, you don't want to... No one wants to do that.
We're on Twitter.
The Facebook page.
We are on Facebook, spouting out words of wisdom and encouragement and information.
We have our Instagrams.
Do we have the Instagram, which is
going
beautiful.
The gangs, the busters.
All of the social media, so you can follow us, like us, lick us, do whatever you like. Whatever it is, don't leave a bad review, please. Because
don't judge us on this episode, please. For the love of bejesus.
We'll catch you next week. Edge Radio 99.3 FM is the radio station. The Dice Men Cometh is the show. See ya!
Bye.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support The Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.